Today, truly empowered by AI. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Today, I want to take you into the deep world of AI, but not the theoretical stuff. Something that's really happening now, something where AI is being used for real world outcomes. And to do that, I'm going to introduce you to Rowan. Rowan, welcome.
Hello, Martin. Great to be here and just happy to be on your show.
Well, thank you very much for spending some time. Now, you're an entrepreneur, and frankly, you know, some bad experiences that you had has led to some really good experiences about the use of AI in the real world. So tell us a little bit about the journey and where you've got to.
Yes. So, you know, I'm actually Australian, if you can believe it. I come from a small town in Foster Tuncurry. So, hey to all those on the mid-north coast. And I left Australia over 30 years ago. Obviously, I lived in London first and then moved to the US and got my education there, et cetera. So I was back during the pandemic because obviously, you know, they were closing the borders and I wanted to be back home. And during the pandemic around 2021, I actually got stalked by a security officer who effectively, because of obviously we were all under a lockdown. So effectively I was stalked for about over a year and it was a fairly traumatizing experience. But as a person who's obviously started out my technology career as an engineer, I decided to just do something about it. And I thought, you know, I can't be the only person who has gone through that. And it was for sheer lack of evidence that nothing could be done about it. So instead of, you know, I like to bring positive things to world problems. That's what engineers do. They try to solve problems, you know, and I created the platform as a result of it. And here we are today.
Right. And the thing about this platform is that it can really take video feeds and analyze it and identify and presumably flag specific instances or events. Is that in real time?
Yes. So there's a distinction between, so one way to look at kind of AI outputs, and I actually spoke about this in a paper I co-wrote with my co-founder, as well as the CTO of my firm, Armatech Global. There's distinctions between the outputs of AI. And one way to look at it is there's, you know, just look at it kind of past, present, and future. So the more predictive it gets, so it's the temporal, in other words, the time aspect, the more predictive it gets, the more it kind of, you know, if it's in real time and you're predicting someone's going to do something bad, then obviously that requires some review, right? Because it could inadvertently accuse somebody. So where so obviously you don't just accuse somebody of doing something. So one way to look at it is the further into predictive aspects of it that we get, the more kind of from a real world kind of physical security perspective, obviously, the more we go into kind of violations of human rights of a person, because you can't just accuse somebody. So it requires the parts of the platform where it's implemented in real time. That has to be done by a master licensee, a security company, or a corporation who has the master license to implement that. So we, in effect, have two models, business models, rather. The first business model is allowing security companies and corporations who need this type of security, and a lot of them do, to implement it responsibly for their specific situation. But the one that you can just go to the website and subscribe, that's post facto. That's after the fact. So if you had 5 hours of video, so think of, you know, incidents that happen, a police officer, it could even be a lawsuit, you know, people, I think, you know, we think of real world situations where people are looking for evidence. So the turnkey SaaS one available for everybody, even a homeowner. You know, if you want to find out who stole your package, you could just, you know, subscribe, and it's turnkey and it's very inexpensive. We've made it as cost efficient as possible. And so for post facto video intelligence, you know, it's available to everybody. For where it's like real time and it potentially goes into a person's, you know, civil liberties or people's civil liberties, that's strictly for the implementation of security companies in which we have authorized partners. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, absolutely. So there are these two models, but the heart of it, it's essentially the ability to be able to look through significant amounts of footage. And, you know, everybody knows they spend a lot of time recording on, you know, doorbells and all sorts of other cameras these days. But, of course, the problem is trying to find the bit you're looking for. So
that's correct.
Yeah. So when you want to search, I mean, is it a text search or does it come up with automatic alerts? Or how does the search bit work?
Excellent question. Excellent question. You kind of, you know, amazing that you just got right to it, to what it does. So for the real life instance where it's, you know, implemented by a security company for their corporate client or customer, obviously those are kind of custom things. So they use the base platform and they, you know, our team will then customize it according to their needs, right? So, you know, because there are customizations, it's not, you know, there might be like 8 weeks before that's implemented. For the post facto intelligence, you hit it right on the, on point with it, because if you had, say, 5 hours of video, typically a security officer, a security guard working for a security company or a law enforcement, they would sit there and, you know, rewind back. You know, you would try to plow through all that. We have various products inside our platform. So think of it just like any suite of technology products that you have. There's three products inside, and one of them, one way to look at it is one called Rowan Now, where if you don't know what happened, you can just upload it and say, click, and it will tell you what happened. So it'll give you an entire narrative. It could be a person goes to the door, or a lady wearing a yellow hat, or, you know, a man with a red cap, you know, goes to the door. So it's quite detailed, and you can do other interactions to get more detail around that. And then it will give you a report. The other tool inside is if you know what you're looking for. So let's say you're looking for a knife, like say there was a fight, you're looking for a knife. You upload their video and you tell the system, I am, you know, you just type it in or in the dropdown, I'm looking for a knife. And then it'll analyze it and it'll tell you whether it found a knife or not. It'll, you know, give you a report. You can edit that report and then, you know, you have yourself a document. A lot of the problems in the security industry, in the security space is, obviously, incident reports. Oftentimes, when there's an incident in a public area or a private sector entity, the incident, they have a logbook. Some of them still, believe it or not, still do that. So what we're effectively doing is speeding up the process of doing that, as well as assisting the entity who's interested in that report to have that report. So when we think of it in real life, well, if a police precinct, say, is using it, instead of them spending hours, and I know I have a lot of friends who are in the force, they do not like sitting at their desk. They want to be out there helping people. So when we think about it, in the grand scheme of things, it helps the public, right? It helps us citizens, because if we have police officers who are spending more time helping people rather than, you know, doing things that they're, you know, reports and all of the kind of drudge work, then it kind of helps save time and make everybody more efficient. So that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, very interesting. And so the idea of being able to get a textual description of a particular event or a scene in video is quite interesting. But presumably underneath all of this, there is some significant AI training. You know, the whole AI idea is that you actually use existing information to be able to extrapolate new information. So tell me about the training program that your AI app has gone through, and what was the quantum of the investment? I'm thinking of, you know, some of the DeepSeek stories and those sorts of things. Where do you fit on that scale?
So, you know, I have to say we have been very fortunate, my firm. My co-founders and I, so there are three founders. I'm the main founder and I have two co-founders. And we have obviously a very close friend of ours, our CTO, who's a former AI professor at Columbia University in New York. My co-founder and he used to be on a DARPA project, DARPA-backed, a cybersecurity startup. So there's a lot of history there. So these are folks, and my other co-founder, Sai, who's our physical security domain expert. So I think one way to really look at AI is that we hear about these AI models. Ooh, there's that model. There's, you know, if you look at OpenAI and ChatGPT and all their AI models, there are these amazing models. But to really apply it in practical terms, in real world terms, you have to have what we call, technologists call, a use case. And in our case, the use case, the usability of it is physical security. It's effectively augmenting the work of and amplifying and the output of a security officer so that that security officer can focus on the more important things. Now, to go back to your point, we are very fortunate because we focused on usability, and we are not, I'm not one of those technologists that will just go in, you know, disrupt an industry and take everybody's jobs. You know, that is not what I'm about, just as a personal, you know, principle. I want to solve problems for people, right? So if you're given a talent to build things, you want to do it for good things, right? So that it will multiply. So to your point, the whole premise of it is to make it usable. So it took us about, we're 3 years old. Usually it takes, you know, the typical kind of AI startup. And I know it's kind of, a lot of people are AI now, you know, it's kind of very overused in a way. Usually they take, you know, they raise 3 to 5 million US dollars, and they don't even get a kind of a full-blown product and platform onto the market. So we've been very fortunate because we've been very focused, and we have a full-blown product, a full-blown platform, enterprise-grade platform, a turnkey SaaS available in 20 countries. And we brought it to market for less than $1 million USD. So we are obviously, from the perspective of our investors, for instance, obviously they'll do very well, very nicely. It's kind of quite an achievement. And I'm very proud of my teammates and my co-founders, and just really happy about the work we've done. And we just look forward to bringing value to the ecosystem.
Yes, that's a very interesting price point. One question there, of course, the DeepSeek story started to actually raise the debate about whether DeepSeek did, if you like, first generation stuff, or whether they actually went to other LLMs and then sort of used those as a basis. What was your approach? Did you actually start from scratch, or did you actually borrow from other LLMs as part of the development process?
So one way to look at, just to, a good point about DeepSeek. DeepSeek's kind of story is really about effectively the commodification of the distillation technique. So obviously there's great thinkers before me. You know, I am nowhere near those people. I just learned from the great minds of our time. And so that technique was actually spoken about 10 years ago. And effectively, the DeepSeek stories about taking the OpenAI model and think of it like a good analogy is like think of it like a pizza with 8 slices, and just taking, instead of taking the slice as a pizza slice, you're taking the slice and you're turning it into a brand new smaller pizza, and it's still just as delicious and nice as the bigger pizza. So it's taking a discrete part, a distilled part of a larger whole, and effectively creating something out of it. Our story is a lot more about the application part of it. So it's more about taking, so obviously DeepSeek is a lot like ChatGPT in that, it's generative AI. Ours is intelligent analysis. So whereas a ChatGPT or a DeepSeek or those generative AI tools, you put something in and it'll output something, you're really generating something. We are taking data that is already in existence and we are analyzing it in a way that is much smarter and much more intelligent. So that's probably, I hope my other engineering leaders won't laugh at my pizza analogy, but that's the best one I can come up with right now. But yeah, so for us, it was really, obviously we have partners in the cloud space. We have worked with big tech companies, obviously because they hold our cloud infrastructure. So that's probably one way to look at it, in that we do not generate something. We are analyzing something that's already in existence. So it's almost like reverse engineering something. So, which is not really a good way to say it, but it's kind of like, as opposed to, generating a brand new video, we're taking something that's factual and real, and gaining insights from it. And we have a feature that will detect if it's a deep fake. So as we know, what if somebody uploads a video and it's not a real video, right? So we know that there's mis and disinformation out there, and we wanna make sure that, we have a mechanism to find out if it's real. So that's just one of the little features. It's not our, obviously there are big firms out there who all they do is detect deep fakes. But we try to give as much kind of value and to our users as much as possible. So it's exciting.
Sounds very interesting. And one of the observations I would make, it sounds to me a little bit revolutionary insofar that you're actually essentially taking data and putting it through your systems to generate insight, right? Now, that for me is actually what AI should always be about, because at the end of the day, what it should be is a tool, an enabler, making outcomes quicker, faster, better. And I sometimes think that some of the existing speak about AI is sort of really, frankly, going around in circles and, an excuse to just buy more hardware. This is a real life application when what you're actually doing is changing things in the real world.
Yes, so we're very focused on our domain, on our use case, which is physical security. If we look at the history of physical security and technology, as far as the physical security industry or security as a whole, it went from kind of like we had video management systems, decades ago, where, the way they did it, they would just upload all this data into, as they're collecting video. And then it became video analysis where, oh, wow, in real time, it can detect objects. And wow, in real time, I can detect and find that lady with the red scarf. That's all very well and good. And there's a lot of use for that, obviously. But when we look at it in real terms, or in kind of in another way, to kind of a really productive way to look at it, let's say you're in an arena and you're a security officer. Obviously, you and your team members are there. There's 20 monitors. How is a human being supposed to, you know, monitor 20 monitors? Or it's just not, you know, there's bound to be, all you have to do is blink and you'll miss a moment, and it could be a key moment. So one way to look at our platform is that, and then after that event, how are you going to then find out if, say, something really did happen? What if there was a human trafficking case and a child went missing? What do we do then? You know, what we miss out on finding out what happened. So we really focused on usability and applicability. And it used to be that just it's the big corporations, right, who can afford this stuff. So when we think about it, they can, it takes sometimes millions, you know, you have to, depending on the size of the entity, sometimes, you know, you have to buy the camera, then the camera has to match the software. And then if you update it, so to me, responsible AI is not just about having responsible algorithms and responsible models. Responsible AI has to do with we or those technologists that build AI tools and build AI platforms and applications have to also think of it from a systems thinking perspective. And what I kind of mean by that is, one needs to think about all of the people in that ecosystem. So when we think of the physical security or just security industry as a whole, you've got security company owners, you've got security guards, you've got the big corporates who would use it, and then you've got the public, right? But when we think about it, if your responsible AI has to do with not just responsible tech, it has to do with thinking about, well, how does it affect security guards? How does it affect security officers? How does it affect police officers? The idea is not for machines to replace humans. The idea is for machines to be a tool to help the humans and amplify the human capability. So in our platform, we are actually the first in the world to have an affiliate program. Most software as a service SaaS companies, where you go in and you go to their website, you buy the product, they have an affiliate program. Sometimes maybe it's a graphic design tool, or, you know, bloggers will take the affiliate link and they'll promote it on their blog. That's a great thing. But we want to take it further and say, well, when you really look at the security industry, it's notorious for having folks lose their jobs when they're no longer physically able. So I think for me, a story, how I came about thinking about the affiliate program is one night. So I've been in Australia now for a while. So one night I was like, you know, obviously I code at night sometimes, and I was at Kohl's and I saw this man of, you know, mature age, and I just felt really bad. He was a security guard. And I'm like, that man should not be doing that. How about, you know, creating a way where that person can have passive income without having to do that? So cut a long story short, fast forward to today, I thought of the affiliate program. So then they could just be at home and you know, analyze video and charge for it, and or however they want to do it. They have their affiliate link and they have recurring revenue every month, and they can build business around it instead of, you know, having to go out there and do frontline work. So the same goes through with our partners, authorized partners. So I really want to create an ecosystem where it's not like, oh, this tech company is just going to, you know, economically benefit from this thing. I think responsible AI is really thinking about, you know, multi-stakeholder principles, all the people in a situation who are going to be affected. So that's kind of my two cents on that. But it's a great question, Martin. Really great question. So
Very interesting. And I just an extension of that. Presumably, therefore, there's an interesting intersection with policing the courts and the judicial system, because presumably this could be part of the evidential package.
Yes. And so, I mean, when we really think about it, so when a technologist builds a technology, it's always used to have good to have more than one use for it, right? So you're going to spend all this money building this thing. It can't just have one use. So to your point, one use could be, you know, obviously, a chain of the evidence, making sure that it remains intact. There are many use cases for the legal world. So when we think about, if people are, lawyers or paralegals or their teams are looking for evidence instead of sitting there for days and the paralegal plowing through hours and hours of footage, they can just upload it to the platform and then they can review it. Is this what I want? No, this is not what I want. And then they can get a snippet of it, and at least they have this evidence package and say, okay, this is what we have, and here's where it occurred. And so, to your point, that's amazing that you're coming up with these amazing use cases, Martin. that's funny. That's actually one of our markets, so that we want to hope to bring value to.
I had this vision of, these criminal procedurals on the TV that are so popular, right? Well, they spend hours and hours trawling through these CCTV. They can just say, there you go. They could sharpen up the story as a result. Let me just broaden the canvas slightly, because I think this is a really interesting conversation at so many levels. Firstly, this is an Australian story. So an Australian company doing something really very innovative and very exciting, which is a big tick. But it's also an indication of where the AI story is evolving to, which is effectively tools enabling people to do things faster, better, smarter, which I think is actually what AI should be about. But there's a third question here. And that is, we are living in a time of great uncertainty. You know, we've seen huge amounts of shift, Donald Trump coming in and upending the rules-based order and all those things. And I'm interested in your perspective as somebody who's very much immersed in the AI. How do you think the AI story is going to evolve in the time ahead in the light of this massive series of changes that are going on around the world, geopolitical and all those things? And is AI something to hang our hat on?
So that's an excellent question and observation, obviously distilled into this amazing kind of insight. And also just asking that question, does it really, is it a stabilizer or does it create further uncertainty? I think at a high level, one way to look at it is any innovation, right? So any innovation, whether it's the internet, the printing press, us going from horse and carriage to cars, there's always a journey and there's always a moment of instability and a moment of not knowing what's going to happen next. So when we look at, for instance, cars, right? So it was horse and carriage. Cars came about and it was very expensive and only the chosen few could afford it. But we don't get rid of cars, right? So we create traffic lights, we create road rules, we create. So in some respects, just speaking now from the perspective of the current kind of AI journey, because obviously there's artificial general intelligence, which is rather more complex, and we will leave that to the computer scientists to figure out. And there is a lot of unknowns. So the responsible implementation of AI technologies becomes really, really important. But to your point, yes, it's kind of like when you think about it, and I'm a technologist, but I also look at the just geopolitical, the risks and all of the things that are going on in the world around us. And, when you think about it, with this kind of new, kind of modern AI systems, because obviously AI has been around for a long time, but just in a, you know, now it's just kind of commodified and commercialized. When we think about it, the world is a lot more volatile, more uncertain, and it can be quite, you know, I mean, I could lose sleep on it, and I've lost sleep on it just trying to think about things just more from a macro perspective. I think this is where kind of, and I'm proud actually with what Department of Industry, Science and Resources have done, because they've really been very proactive. This is a tough technology to regulate. It is moving so fast, and for regulators such as DISAR, or well, they're not really the regulator, they're putting guidances out, because obviously that's all we can do right now, and it, you know, it's evolving. You know, the important thing I think is to focus on solving the problems that it is bringing up. So obviously the US, and I have perspective about that as well, there's always going to be inherent dualism in our world, right? There's always good and there's always going to be bad. One of my friends who's all, you know, in the field said to me, you know, Rowan, there's only one constant, and that's human stupidity. So we just, let's just hope that there's more of us out there who really look at the technology as something that can be for good. So it could stabilize things in a sense that, let's look at, say, just security, you know, we could use it in a way that can determine things faster. We can look at fraud detection, for instance, on kind of like in the more cyber area. We can use it for finding out the best for pharmaceuticals, for instance, to cure. Hopefully we find cures for certain diseases. The part where it creates uncertainty is that obviously there's mis and disinformation. What is true now? What is really the truth? And to what extent do we sit there and say, having our own kind of echo chambers, if what is perpetrated is untruths, and that's the consumption of that person's knowledge or information, then what happens, right? So there's many, the uncertainty is obviously if they are consuming information that is not true or not factual, not based on fact, it will create these kind of almost like little clusters of untruths. So that's obviously kind of like the digital, and it's an important space because obviously mis and disinformation has affected democracies around the world, not just in the current one, but we know all about obviously a very famous case, you know, the Cambridge Analytica case, where effectively psychographic information was used to steer a swing voter's decision. So these are all obviously broad, difficult problems. And it goes back to my friend's comment about humans. So my hope is more people will just focus on really solving the problems. And I'm certainly, if I move the needle just slightly, that's good enough for me in my lifetime. But hopefully there are more. And there are big tech companies who are doing very responsible things in their deployment of it. There are some who are not responsible about it. So I think keeping the dialogue and conversation around it in a way that is healthy. So when we think about, you know, potentiality versus actuality, when we think of AI regulation, right? So, well, there's AI ethics. That's true. And the ethical and moral perspective of AI should always be there. But in order for it to have any effect, we need to look at the actual thing, which is regulation. So that's kind of what I'm hoping to focus on and bring value to you know, the ongoing consultations. So I think we can keep on complaining and complaining. This is horrible. So that's the potentiality part. But the actuality part is, okay, it's terrible. So now what are we going to do about it? So that's really what I want to kind of focus my energies on, and hopefully because that will have a meaningful impact to people. There's enough people complaining about it, so I want to do something about the part. So, you know, DISAR is doing an amazing job with the consultations, really collaborative with the public. So we have a lot to be proud of here in our country. So.
Thanks for that answer. That's very interesting. I've always had the view that AI is a bit of a modern equivalent of nuclear. And if you think about nuclear, nuclear is a massive technology, but it can go in one of two ways. It can create bombs and wars and kill people, or it can create energy and power and you know, take us to hopefully the stars. It's what people do with the technologies, rather than the technologies themselves. And I sometimes think that we get fixated on the technology rather than the fact that technology is merely a tool that humans have, and the choices that we make as humans determine the outcomes, not the technology itself. And I think that's something just that, you know, to underscore from my perspective as a philosopher. And that's why I'm very interested in the AI story, and specifically this story. So if people want to find out more about Ryan, the app, where do they go?
So www.roand.ai. So just roandai.ai. They'll be able to see, you know, to take a look at it there.
Well, terrific. Founder and CEO Roand Monte, thank you so much for speaking with me today. Congratulations on your journey and the app. And I'll be watching with interest to see how it develops. Thank you very much for spending some time with us today.
Thank you so much, Martin. I really, really appreciate it.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.